From Storyflow, this is your daily audio brief. Chloe here. July 28th. Health and longevity in 10. Let's begin with what changed my mind this week. Let's get into it. First, from Stat. After PCOS became PMOS, there's hope for new awareness among Black and Latina women. A recent shift in how PCOS is classified might bring more attention to the specific health challenges faced by Black and Latina women. Polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome, or PMOS, is now the preferred term for what used to be known as PCOS. This change acknowledges the condition's broader impact on hormone regulation and metabolism. A study published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism found that women with PMOS are more likely to experience endometriosis and fibroids, which are common in Black and Latina women. Researchers hope that this reclassification will lead to better understanding and treatment of these symptoms, particularly among underrepresented groups. Next, second, from Stat. Opinion, Stat Plus, dementia finally has a business model. I was reading about the Alzheimer Association International Conference, and it's crazy how much the field has changed in just 9 years. They're still holding the conference at the same place in London, but the thinking around dementia has shifted significantly. One moment that stood out was a speaker's comment at a breakfast meeting organised by the Davos Alzheimer's Collaborative. They're a five-year-old organisation that's brought together leading groups worldwide to create an innovation ecosystem for Alzheimer's research. The goal is to accelerate breakthroughs, develop and scale promising solutions, and eventually equip every healthcare system to tackle dementia globally. The conference was a reminder that the business model for dementia research is finally taking shape. It's no longer just about throwing money at the problem. Now there's a focus on collaboration and innovation. This shift is reflected in the growing number of private companies, venture capital firms, and philanthropic organisations investing in dementia research. The conference even featured a panel discussion on the role of private capital in driving progress against Alzheimer's. One of the key takeaways from the conference was the recognition that dementia is no longer just a medical problem, but also an economic one. The economic burden of dementia is estimated to be in the trillions, and it's expected to continue growing as the global population ages. This has created a sense of urgency among policymakers, researchers, and industry leaders to find solutions that can be scaled up and implemented quickly. The conference also highlighted the importance of data sharing and collaboration in driving progress against dementia. There's a growing recognition that the traditional model of researchers working in isolation is no longer sustainable, and that sharing data and resources is key to accelerating breakthroughs. This shift is reflected in the growing number of partnerships between academia, industry, and government to share data and resources. Overall, the conference was a reminder that the business model for dementia research is finally taking shape, and that there's a growing sense of urgency and collaboration around the issue. It's an exciting time for the field, and one that holds a lot of promise for finding new treatments and solutions for dementia. Up next, third, from Stat, from Lost Cause to Gold Rush, biotech swarm to cure AATD. Biotech firms are pouring billions into therapies for alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, AATD, a rare genetic liver disorder that leaves patients with a faulty protein that can't protect the lungs. The push is driven by early-stage studies, mostly phase 1-2 trials, showing that gene editing and protein replacement approaches can raise functional protein levels, though the data are still modest and safety profiles are being mapped. The race is split between two main strategies. One uses viral vectors to deliver a corrected gene to liver cells. The other supplies engineered protein infusions. both have shown limited but promising reductions in liver enzyme markers, yet neither has yet proved long-term lung benefit. Competition is fierce, with US and Chinese companies filing overlapping patents and occasionally pulling back from joint ventures. The field is still in its infancy, so while the financial hype is big, the clinical evidence remains early and the path to a cure is still being charted. And then. Fourth, from STAT, CMS evaluates 1 year of health tech progress, announces 8 new pledge categories. CMEs just wrapped up its first year of looking at how health tech tools are actually working in the field. And the takeaway is that the big push to move data off paper is finally showing some traction. The agency sifted through reports from dozens of pilot projects and existing Medicare data, so the evidence is a mix of real-world outcomes rather than a single trial. From that review, they added 8 new pledge categories, each aimed at nudging providers towards specific digital habits, things like using interoperable records, expanding telehealth access, and standardising patient-reported outcomes. The ceremony to announce the updates was a bit theatrical. A coffin labelled RIP Clipboard was carried onto the stage, a visual reminder that the old paper-based intake forms are meant to be retired. It wasn't just for show. The symbolism underscores the shift toward electronic, patient-centred data capture that the new pledges are meant to reinforce. What this means for you is that the next round of Medicare incentives will be tied to those 8 categories. If a practice adopts the targeted tools, say, a shared electronic health record that talks to other systems or a telehealth platform that meets the new quality standards, it can qualify for additional support. The rollout is still early, but the evidence base is growing, so keeping an eye on which pledges align with your workflow could help you stay ahead of the curve. Next, fifth from Stay Young. Half of this list was tested on yeast. Harvard's anti-aging protocol. Dr. Sinclair reversed his biological age by nearly a decade. Here's the 6-step routine the world's leading genetics expert uses to stay young. 6 steps follow. Exercise, resveratrol, fasting, cold, NAD, blood sugar. Start with the claim, because the whole list hangs from it. Reversed his biological age by nearly a decade. No panel is shown, no test is named, no before, no after, no date. It is a sentence about one man's body, offered with no measurement attached, and it is doing the same job the aging is optional line at the bottom is doing. Up next. Sixth, from Lindsay Mack's Complexity Edge. Starve an autistic nervous system, it starts looking like OCD. The piece is a clinician's perspective, not a new study. Just a therapist's observation of how many highly masked autistic adults end up looking like they have OCD, because they're not getting the repetitive, focused processing their nervous systems crave. She reminds us that autism and OCD are separate diagnoses in the DSM, each with its own symptom checklist and functional impact. For autism, the criteria involve persistent differences in social communication plus at least 2 kinds of repetitive behaviours. OCD, by contrast, hinges on distressing intrusive thoughts and compulsions performed to ease anxiety. Because masking can suppress the autistic-specific routines, the resulting behaviour may be misread as compulsive, so clinicians should check the underlying reasons before labelling it OCD. And then, seventh, from Off-Grid with Marjorie Wildcraft. 26 OTCella, 26 Off-Grid with Marjorie Wildcraft. I've been keeping an eye on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The latest figures show it's sitting at about 311 million barrels, which is only roughly 11 million barrels above what's considered the tank bottom. Reporting stopped around July 17th, so the exact level is a bit fuzzy, but the trend suggests the reserve is hovering just above the minimum threshold. At the same time, Cushing, Oklahoma, is holding around 19.4 million barrels, also below its usual 20 million barrel floor. Those numbers together hint at a tightening market that could push prices higher if demand spikes. On the supply side, two choke points have been hit. The Strait of Hormuz remains a concern, and now the Bab al-Mandeb passage in the Red Sea has been blocked by Houthi forces. Both disruptions limit oil flow from the Gulf to Asia, adding pressure to an already constrained market. Some analysts are talking about a potential squeeze, so a few people are recommending stocking up on essentials while free shipping deals are still available. I also wanted to share a quick personal check-in. I've been juggling rabbit tractor projects, duck raising, and some new pasture work, and I'm making a point to get at least 8 hours of sleep each night. The mental load has been heavy lately. Periods of low mood and intrusive thoughts have crept in, likely tied to physical fatigue and a sugar binge. I'm leaning on privacy resources and a few cybersecurity reads, the Fairlife ransomware hit, smart meter water cuts, to stay grounded. Lastly, a few market tidbits. Silver and theta positions feel solid. Japan's yen is weakening and could force a large US Treasury sell-off. And there are rumours of high-tech police vans for phone monitoring. Nothing dramatic yet, but keep an eye on those developments. Take care and stay stocked. That's the read. Small inputs, compounding results. Back tomorrow. That's your brief. Find every story and claim your own free feed at storyflow.com.